Time now for Real Estate with Mariah and Spence on 1430 KYKN. Now, here's their host, Warren Franklin.
Welcome to Real Estate with Mariah and Spence. We have another great show lined up today. You're always welcome to call Mariah or Spence at the Vetrus Crawford Realty Group to discuss anything about real estate. Their number is 503-507-3666. So let's get the show started today. And today we're going to cover some real estate questions. But before we get there, I want to talk about love letters. Our legislature says no more love letters, huh?
Yeah. So Oregon is now the very first state to officially ban love letters. I know we mentioned it in a few episodes back that they were talking about it, but now it's official. They're now banned in the state of Oregon with offers.
Yeah, and let's explain a little bit what a love letter is again, because it was a few episodes back. These were and are pretty common when you're getting a multiple offer situation. A lot of buyers just want to let the seller know who they are, what their family, what the use is of the property, just to maybe create a picture for the seller to know who is actually purchasing their property, because it is a little bit ensuring for me as a seller to know that, hey, my property is going to be in good hands after I do sell the property. And I believe that's the whole intent of this letter to the seller when submitting an offer. But at this point, Oregon has decided that could be discriminatory. We can discriminate based off of a letter, based off ethnicity,
and a lot of times I think one of the reasons is because a lot of times the buyers will include a picture of their family. But like we were saying earlier, I think the reason why I feel like this is a little silly is because if the home seller really wanted to look up the home buyer, it's 2021. They could very easily just Google their name, look them up on Facebook, or, you know, it's super, super easy to just find out who's buying your home. And so if that's the reason, I feel like it's really not that big of a deal, but...
Right. The reality is I could probably Google anybody's name or just look up county record.
But you wouldn't know necessarily what's in their thought about what they're going to do with the property, right?
Right.
Exactly. You see who they are.
Right.
Maybe a little bit of their background to get an idea.
And that's one of the cool things with this letter that I think is really neat, just to share how much you do love and express. Because let's face it, us as homeowners, We love our homes. It's our home to us. It's not just a place to come home and never remember again. We've really put a lot of work, a lot of effort into our homes, whether it's your garden beds, whether it's your paint, whether it's your windows, whether it's the inside of your home that you fully just remodeled. There's a lot of pride in home ownership. And so a lot of times that could be what that letter is all about. It's just letting the seller know all the good stuff they've done to the property and how much you appreciate it now.
Right. And a lot of home sellers, their home is, I mean, it's very sentimental to them. They have so many memories. And I would never say that a love letter going along with an offer is really going to make that big of a difference. Odds are it's probably not going to affect things, because at the end of the day, the money is really what they're looking for, the money or the terms. But I've had times where a home seller will say, like, it's really important to me that, you know, I raise like 5 kids in this house, and it's really important to me that the next family has kids. It's great schools, walking distance, and I would love to see that. And the way I see it is that should be the seller's decision. If she wants to sell with a family who has kids, it's her house, and you know, it's a free country. She should be able to do that.
I love that. I love that. Well, let's start and get into the show today. We got a Q&A style. Mariah and I, we're going to spurt off some questions. We're going to get short, great answers for you. And it's a really good day to do this, because it's trending what's happening with today's market. And that's super important for our audience to know, for everybody to be aware of, hey, what's it like if I'm a buyer out there? Hey, what's it like if I'm a seller out there? And so on. So here we go. Let's roll into it. Mariah, roll us off with this first question.
The first question today is, do we need 2 different agents if we are buying and selling in 2 different areas?
This is a controversial question, though.
Kind of.
Because I've seen it. I've seen a lot of agents take this on as a really, really big task, okay? And I think the key to this is, what are you most comfortable doing as an agent? But also you as the client, are you comfortable working with the same agent in a completely different market maybe? There is a difference between Salem and Portland. There's a difference between Kaiser and Wilsonville.
Right.
Okay, there's that gap. And unfortunately, if you're not living there, if you haven't spent a lot of time there, sadly, you could say you know the market based off of what your computer is telling you, but you really don't until you're fully immersed and are there on more lengths than just a Saturday drive with your wife to the mall.
Right.
If that makes sense.
I think it depends on how far out. Of course, you know, if it's someone selling their home in Salem and buying in Woodburn, that's only a 30-minute drive.
Yeah,
you work there
nothing.
Often. That's not a big deal. But say it's, you know, a little bit further away, then maybe a better idea to find someone who specializes in that area. And the good thing is at our company, we have a really great referral network. So we're able to send you as a home, you know, say you're selling your home here and buying somewhere else, we're able to send you to someone who's going to take care of you and do a really great job.
Yeah. And I think that's really important to do for your clients. There's a thing called commissions breath out there for a lot of brokers. And it's very easily saw when we're out there showing homes. And if your broker or agent is representing you in a different area and really doesn't know the key answers to the simple questions you're asking them, just say, hey, there's no personal insult here. I'm happy for you to refer me out to another agent. That agent's still going to get a referral fee if you're worried about them getting paid due to the performance in other homes they've already shown you. I think they're due that. They are. But there's nothing wrong with going to another agent that is specifically located and specializes in that market.
Right.
And one thing that we want to do, because I haven't clarified this of our areas, generally, if we're working I-5 corridor, I'm going to stop right at Aurora and Donald. I usually don't touch into Wilsonville, Tigard. We have because
really
family and friends,
changes.
It does depend on the home and what we're really looking at, because prices are different there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we're going south, I'm going to stop at Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go to Eugene, but nothing further. And then let's go west to east. I'm going to stop at Detroit and stop at Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
That's my landmarker. So that's why I say if you got a home in the Mid-Willamette Valley, we truly can get this home sold, listed, and then also get you repurchase in a new property.
You know,
well,
the big challenge is you find you're moving out of area. How do you find a good real estate agent? And you were talking about with your company,
mm-hmm.
the referrals are there, right?
And that's key.
Mm-hmm.
That's key.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. Yeah. And that's something that I would definitely have your agent help you out with.
Yeah. Our referral program, I love referring clients out, especially when we are getting clients moving out of state from Oregon. It is really fun because that's like another networking opportunity for Mariah and I to meet other agents in different states as well. That perform and do really good work.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually get to collaborate and share our ideas.
And then
to
it comes back
us.
To you a little later, maybe too.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it does.
Of that. Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, you never know.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. I want to remind you, you can always get in touch with Mariah and Spence at the Vetrus Crawford Realty Group by calling 503-507-3666. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Welcome back to Real Estate with Mariah and Spence on 1430 KYKN. Here's their host, Warren Franklin.
We're back with Mariah and Spence with the Vetrus Crawford Realty Group. You can contact them at 503-507-3666. And let's continue our conversation about questions you get in real estate.
Hmm? So why do you think there's been an increase in new listings lately?
Before we get to the straight answer, I did want to read off a statistic I've been reading. And then obviously every other month, it comes up with a new property report based off of the previous years of amount of listing sales and stuff like that in our area. But I did want to read off this quick statistic. In June, new listings increased 5.5% year over year and 10.9% compared with May, according to Realtor.com. So what that tells me is we have seen a slight increase of listings. We still are, believe it or not, under a month of inventory out there, which that's not much to choose from. We still need more listings. I remember being, 3 years ago now, the normal was like 3.5 months then.
And even then we were hearing, we're low on inventory, you know, when someone would ask how the markets, that's
right now. I couldn't imagine if we were like 3 months of inventory.
It would feel
it would feel
a lot different. It
would just it would feel a lot different. But with that statistic being thrown out there, that is telling us that A, we're in some type of selling season. Historically, the month of May and June, they are the most homes to hit market. So what I mean is there's more listings those months than any other months of the year. May and June, more listings tend to come up. But based off of statistics reading back to last year, that number still increased, which is good. Which is really good. And there's more sales this year than there was last year. So that tells me there's still buyers, there's still sellers. What this could do, though, with the selling market is not necessarily decrease it by much or make it harder for a seller to sell their home just because, like I said, we're under a month of inventory still. But things could change. After a week, you might only receive 4 offers rather than 8 offers, which I personally have just saw on our listings. And this is a regular residential home sale price. We were listed at $345. We just got it under contract over the last 5 days. I like leaving my listings on market for at least a week usually, or over a weekend, and we only got 4 offers. And I used to see 8,
in that price range 12, especially. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
But they were still really good offers. So what that does tell me is people are still willing and wanting to compete. They understand because there's still 3 competing offers they got to go up against. Their odds are just better right
are
now.
Are they still selling like 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 over asking price?
Average would be 20,000.
Yeah.
With this listing, we got 20,000 over ask price. Yeah. So that's staying very consistent with all the others.
What is buyer's remorse, and what are some ways we can try to avoid that when purchasing? Speaking to home buyers out there.
You want to answer that one for me, Ray?
Buyer's remorse is when you... Well, it's when you regret your purchase after you purchase it.
Right. And this is something that nobody wants to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to purchase a home and then feel sad about it. Yeah. And in these markets, I could assume there are maybe a couple that I wouldn't say they don't love their home, but they would say, man, maybe I did pay a little bit too much, or maybe I could have negotiated this home a little bit better. And that could just be in...
Why didn't somebody tell me the railroad tracks were just behind my house?
Yeah, right? That type of thing. I didn't know this was going to be here. I mean...
And those things do happen, though, in real estate. And that's why it is important, that saying, if you, I think it's like, choose a bad agent, you'll wish you chose a better one because it saves you more money in the end.
I don't know the saying. I know what you're trying to say, though.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, because your representing agent is going to be doing that due diligence for you, right, is what I'm trying to
but
say.
Sometimes there's things that you just... Like, no one could have known, or, things happen.
Yeah.
So, does a seller care about what type of home loan the buyer has? And if so, why do they care? Recently, I've seen them caring a lot more. I remember in the past, it never used to be that big of a deal. But with how competitive things are, I definitely see sellers caring.
Yeah. And the reason I think they do care, though, is because there's no wrong loan between an FHA versus conventional. I personally believe an FHA loan is just as good as a conventional. It's actually backed by the federal programs. The only difference is the sellers say that the buyer is a little less unqualified just because they come in with a little less money down, rather than a 5%, they're coming in with 3.5% usually. Sometimes they tend to ask for sellers to pay more closing costs because of their income. They can't afford closing costs to purchase the home. And then also we take into consideration credit scores. Now, I don't believe you have bad credit, you're a bad person. I don't believe that one bit. But the reality is your situation, if that's the only loan program you can fit into, then an FHA is all you have. But in markets like this, I will tell you what, if you're a buyer out there and all you're qualified with is an FHA loan, sometimes that conventional loan is just more worthy for a seller to choose based off of the other person's qualifications.
So is there a chance the home could go back to the seller then? Is that what happens?
Chance the home could go back to the seller as if the purchase doesn't...
If for some reason the person buying the home doesn't make their payments, and I thought it went back to the bank and it really didn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. So if you purchase a home and you don't make your payments, you're going to go into a default foreclosure state. Right. You are the homeowner after purchase. But say there is a fail sale during escrow before the home closes, our job as realtors is to always get you a secondary backup offer. And currently right now, we're in a market where we, like I said, I just had four other offers. Well, out of the four, I'm going to put someone in secondary position. And if there were to be a fail sale, we're going to swing that secondary position right into first. Yeah, we might get a further closing date because we got to adjust inspections and appraisals because we're usually going to be 14 days within the process. But generally, that's how we're going to proceed with that.
All right. So the fail sale is...
That's really their biggest concern.
Is the only reason because of finance, or are there other reasons they're fail sale?
There's fail sales due to inspections. There's fail sales due to non-meant contingencies.
Appraisals,
financing.
Someone just backing out.
Yeah, the Oregon sale agreement is in reality written in favor of the buyer. And I try to communicate that with my sellers, especially in that listing appointment, but also as we're reviewing the offers sent to us. I just did last night. The deal is never done until it's closed. Okay. It's one of those things like it's never over until the fat lady sinks,
right.
You know, and that's absolutely true though in real estate, because fail sales do happen the day before closing, and it's usually because of financing. Man, someone didn't, and it's usually because of a job
Something
qualification.
Happened.
It didn't meet. Maybe, they're moving across state and then the underwriter just had a lender requirement saying, man, we need verification of employment all over again, but we need X amount of weeks with you working this job while in that state. Things like that happen.
Yeah.
And that's no fault of the broker. It's generally in fault of that buyer and that lending institution that should have brought up these requirements weeks ago before we were a day before closing.
Oh, good stuff. Thank you. All right, let's take a quick break. You're listening to Real Estate with Mariah and Spence with the Vetrus Crawford Realty Group. You can contact them at 503-507-3666, and we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Real Estate with Mariah and Spence on 1430 KYKN. Here's their host, Warren Franklin.
We're back with Mariah and Spence with the Vetrus Crawford Realty Group. You can call them at 503-507-3666, and let's continue answering those real estate questions.
What are some of the hidden fees that come along with buying or selling a home?
If you're a first-time home buyer, this is a common question I do get. And what I'm going to say is pretty accurate when it comes to costs. When it comes to an inspection, we have a 12-day inspection period generally. And this inspection period is really up to you. And that comes within our offer and it's presented to a seller. But these are business days. So it gives you about 2.5 weeks to complete them. And it's going to cost you about $375 to $550. Okay. Every home is different due to square footage, bedrooms, lot size, that type of stuff. And a general home inspection is going to back you as a buyer. But then also there's other types of inspections like a sewer scope, a radon test. Sewer scopes are like $100, you know, radon tests. I haven't really had one done in quite a while.
Which usually those aren't ones that every buyer gets. Usually if you have an older home, then you'd probably want a sewer scope.
Yeah. And different sides of town are different too. Mm-hmm. Like homes in West Salem, especially, they're more prone to having radon in the home. And that's just coming from the soils. Mm-hmm. And then we got, say you have a septic, you know, or a well. Well, people are going to want to test those and make sure they're working properly. Yes, but also it doesn't have bad bacteria in them and that the septic's pumping correctly. So all of them, they're generally going to be a couple $100 a piece. So when you're getting into this buying process, there are fees like that other than your down payment. And now let's talk closing costs. That goes through the tax. When are you purchasing that home? That time frame, because you got to prorate taxes by half the year or so on, because usually you got to pay a full year of taxes at least, and then get escrow fees and stuff like that, lending fees, and so on. Appraisals.
Mm-hmm.
You as a buyer, you are subject to paying for the appraisal. It's not on the seller. And those are hidden fees that I would call in a real estate transaction. Broker fees, if you're working with a broker and you're a buyer, you don't pay the buyer's agent anything. Yeah. The way we get paid is out of the selling commission that was negotiated between the seller when they listed the home. Mm. So that's how we get paid. So don't worry about reaching out to us because you don't want to pay us. It sounds too good to be true sometimes. You just pick up a phone and say, can you help me find a house? This is what I'm looking for. And get in not pay somebody. It's kind of weird. I understand that.
Mm. It sounds to me like those fees, if you kind of calculate maybe around $1,000 is what's going to cost you for
yeah,
those.
Yeah, if we were to do everything, yeah, we could easily get to $600 to $1,200.
Yeah.
You know, generally what I'd be paying is about $600 to $800 when it comes to my home inspections, to do a full home inspection, sewer scopes.
Does the real estate agent ever suggest these things and say, you know what, this is an older home, it might be wise to do this? Because I could see where a buyer not having the experience would know that they're supposed to do something.
As a real estate agent, I always say you should suggest your buyer has an inspection performed. It's just going to back them, but also it's going to help you when it comes to negotiations and stuff like that. And you need to be aware of some things, because just going to a home and showing it in 15-30 minutes and then your buyer saying, yeah, this works for us, that's the very, very beginning. There's a little bit more due diligence, I would say, that needs to be done for that $300,000-$400,000 purchase.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
So do your coverage. And then also at Berkshire Hathaway, we have a vendors list that we use. And then obviously with us working X amount of deals, I have a full team behind me that we like to use and we'll refer you out to them. I don't get paid anything by referring these vendors. I just use them because I know they're good at what they do and it's worth it.
And it does make a big difference knowing that who you're working with is going to help things go smoother.
That's important as a buyer to know that, hey, you're referring somebody that you've had good success with.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's important. And also knowing that you're not going to get a little bit of money under the table or something back to make it all happen.
Yeah, and sometimes people do ask that. Well, you're only referring me to this guy because they think something under the table happens, but that's not true. I don't take any money from these guys. I use them because they are the professional. They're better at what they do than I could do because that's the field they're in.
Right.
And it's taken a few, it's taken a lot of trial and error for us to find those professionals and vendors. It took a good handful of inspectors until we found one that we were like, wow, we need all our buyers to use this guy. He's awesome. So it's taken trial and error to get there.
So let's get to the last question of the day.
All right.
What happens if the former homeowner won't move out of the house?
Yuck.
Yeah.
Bad situation, guys.
You hear a lot more about the tenants not moving out, but you don't hear if it's a rental, but if the homeowner not moving out, this is not something you hear about often, but it has happened before. And I think that's, one reason why the final walkthrough is so important, because you usually have that a few days before closing. And if the sellers, their stuff is all there, they're not moving out, you can say, we're not going to close and pay you until the stuff is gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really important, though, for that final walkthrough and the importance of it. But also when it comes to legalities, we aren't a written and binding contract here. Mm-hmm. And we did sign there to be a closing date. And if the home did end up funding and this homeowner is not moving out, we got to go to a legal action at this point. We can't take this on ourselves. We have to lawyer up and get them out of this home, because you as the new homeowner and purchaser have all the rights to do so.
So could you, and you're not an attorney, so maybe you can deal with all that, but you know, if you have to sue, you could probably sue for the funds that it costs to do that too.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. Fees, funds, you will strategize with your lawyer and come up with that.
Yeah.
So.
All right, very good. A lot of good stuff today. Thank you for sharing with us. Really appreciate it. Hey, that's it for this week. You can listen again, 9:30 a.m. Saturday mornings right here on 1430 KYKN. You can contact Mariah Spence at the Vetrus Crawford Realty Group at 503-507-3666. That number again is 503-507-3666.
You've been listening to Real Estate with Mariah and Spence right here on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.